Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. With a flu shot unreliable this year, a particularly virulent form of the flu circulating, and antiviral drug stockpiles dwindling, the best medicine is preventive medicine to bolster our immune defenses. I've received countless requests from my audience for a specific list of supplements that I recommend to help get through the season. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Seasonal Immune Support Protocol. My supplement recommendations offering the greatest boost for your immune system when it's needed most. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com for more information. In addition to the Seasonal Immune Support Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for our Supplement Starter Kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These new protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle, the same supplements I take for myself and prescribe for my patients. And for a limited time, you'll get 10% off and free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our subject is anxiety and how to cope with it. Our guest, a perennial guest here on Intelligent Medicine, because he always has a lot to contribute on the subject, is Dr. Peter Bongiorno, one of my good colleagues here in New York City. He's a naturopathic physician, an ND, and also a licensed acupuncturist, and he's got a busy practice here in New York City and also on Long Island. He is author of several books on the subject, Put Anxiety Behind You, How Come They're Happy and I'm Not, and Holistic Solutions for Anxiety and Depression. Hey, with so many choices, which book would you suggest people start with? Which is your most recent pronouncement on this?
Sure. Well, my most recent book is the Put Anxiety Behind You book. And in many ways, I think it's a great place to start, because even for people who are depressed and don't necessarily have anxiety as much, depression in most cases stems from long-term anxiety. So the things that are in the anxiety book will definitely apply towards the depression. So I usually tell people to start with the Put Anxiety Behind You book. And then if they are truly depressed, the How Come They're Happy and I'm Not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, sometimes I get a response from patients saying, if I suggest that they may be suffering from mild depression, they say, no, I'm not depressed. I'm just anxious. As if there was some kind of firewall between those two states. How are those related?
Yeah, that's such a beautiful question, because I think even in modern psychiatry, they see them as different entities. But the truth is, they use the same drugs to treat both of them, So that tells us something right there.
Yep. So, I mean, same neurochemistry, same imbalances may be part and parcel.
Absolutely. I when I was at the National Institutes of Health, we used to do studies on rats. And what we would do to create a model of anxiety and then depression, because you can't really ask a rat in a questionnaire how they're feeling.
Right.
So what you would do is you would put them through kind of these random events where you take the rat from one box and put it in the other. And so you keep changing their social structures around. You'd kind of have them do these exercises and things kind of against their will, where they didn't necessarily expect it. And then you change up where they are and you keep changing their life around to the point where they don't feel they have control over their environment.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like life in Manhattan, actually.
Well, that's my whole point, right? That's exactly what a lot of us feel as well. That's totally true. It's funny, when I speak at medical schools, I'll usually have a medical student who will raise her hand and say something like, wow, that feels like my life. Right. And it's true for all of us, not just med students. It's we're all kind of running a rat race, right? Mm-hmm. And what happens to these poor animals is they get very anxious for a time, and they show anxious response. And if you look at their blood, they'll have high levels of stress hormones and inflammatory mediators, inflammation. And then you get to the point where they start giving up, and then they stop doing the things they would normally do. They stop looking around, they stop looking for food. And that's how you know they're getting depressed. And if you check their blood,
they just give up. Yeah.
Right. It's called learned hopelessness. They give up.
You just read my mind. I was just about to throw that term into the lexicon, because what happens is you just become dispirited and you just stop trying.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's what happens to, you know, the patients I work with too. You know, maybe they've been anxious for many, many years to the point where they just, you know, their body physiologically doesn't feel it can deal with it. Maybe their iron's low too. Their vitamin D is low. They have a lot of inflammation. Maybe they're not getting the right nutrients as well. And then all of these things pile up to the point where, like, you know what? I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to go crawl under a rock. Indeed. And unfortunately, sometimes it's dangerous, you know, where occasionally people will say to themselves, well, maybe I just shouldn't be here anymore. Yeah. And of course, that's, you know, very, very concerning.
The other variation on the theme is, some people say, I just want to check myself into a hospital. And I go, no, you don't really want to do that.
Yeah. Well, the problem there is, you know, unfortunately, modern psychiatry really doesn't lend itself towards fixing the underlying issues, that we just use drugs to cover up the symptoms. And you know, and occasionally in the case of a very dangerous situation, there may be some benefit to that, you know, especially if people don't have a support system. Yeah. But in most cases, you know, we're really not working on fixing the problem. We're just sort of covering it up. And unfortunately, you know, the old analogy I like to use is when a car engine has the oil light on, you know, if we just cover it with a piece of electric tape and keep pretending like nothing happened, eventually that car breaks down. And it's the same with the drugs. You know, if we just cover up a symptom, eventually we still kind of break down.
I just want to get this clear, because some of my integrative colleagues are inalterably opposed to medication. They think that medication mm-hmm. is not an option for people suffering mm-hmm. from depression, anxiety. They feel it's part of a mind control paradigm, or that it's that these medications have not been properly vetted. And where do you stand on that? Do you feel that in some instances medication is warranted, or are you inalterably
right.
opposed?
Well, you know, I mean, here's the thing. You know, if somebody's exceedingly depressed and, you know, when I work with people, I talk about them, you know, going and buying salmon at Whole Foods and cooking, you know, doing things like that. And if they're not even getting out of bed, my guess is I'm not going to be able to get them out and get them to exercise. Yep. and do the things that really we need to do as a first step. And I, you know, and sometimes if the only thing a person can do is take a pill, once a day, and that might help them just get to the point where they can function so that they can do the things that will actually help them feel better. I mean, I'm not opposed to that. I think we need to keep everything on the table. And even though in the vast majority of cases, I think there are other options, I do think there are times when that can be life-saving as well. And I just think, you know, it's smart just to keep all options on the table.
Well, your views perfectly mirror mine, so thanks for clarifying that. So let's talk about, you know, if you were to choose, and it may be hard to choose because you may have a big arsenal of supplements and vitamin and mineral nutraceutical interventions for anxiety and depression, what would be your five favorites? Can you talk about those?
Oh, that's a great question. That's a tough question. Well, I would say for anxiety, you know, obviously I try to match them to the person I'm working with. Mm-hmm. So it's usually there's like a picture of different, you know, types of people and what they're going through. And sometimes I find certain supplements tend to work better. Having said that, if I didn't know a person and I just had to pick my favorites, for anxiety, I really do like magnesium as a first choice. Magnesium kind of lowers the excitability of the middle part of the brain called the hypothalamus. A lot of people with anxiety are very low in magnesium. I really do like glycine, which is an amino acid, which is not only good for the liver, but it's also good to raise GABA levels naturally. One of the others that I've been using for the past few years with very good results is lithium orotate, mm-hmm. which is not lithium, the
right.
drug, which
not the,
is lithium
not the
carbamate.
Drug for manic depression.
Exactly. But it's a mineral, you know, somewhat similar to magnesium in that sense. And it's also very good for raising GABA naturally and helping your brain kind of get in line in terms of making its own GABA. So that's certainly a favorite of mine for anxiety. Mm-hmm. Passion flower is a beautiful herb, which is very good for people. You know, I had a patient today who came in and she said, yeah, you know, I go to bed and I have this mind that keeps thinking and keeps, she called it the monkey mind, which is actually what they call it in Chinese medicine, that mind that keeps jumping around from thing to thing. Mm-hmm. Well, that passion flower is beautiful for that. Hmm. And it kind of helps people calm a bit. So those would be some of my favorites for anxiety. For depression, I'm sorry?
Are you a fan of theanine? Theanine is quite popular for calming
theanine
effects.
Theanine is beautiful. Yes, theanine helps get people into that alpha state, that very calming state that we need to be in, especially before we fall asleep. And it's the state that we get into when we have a good meditation. Theanine comes naturally from green tea. And it's the calming part of green tea, whereas the caffeine is the part, you know, the monks used to use green tea because it would keep them in calm wakefulness. Mm-hmm. And the caffeine was the part that kept them awake, and the theanine was the part that kept them calm. So it's a really beautiful amino acid. Yeah, absolutely.
And you're going to talk about depression.
Yeah, for depression, yeah. I don't know. Am I allowed to talk about a formulation
Please,
that I put together?
Absolutely. By all means. Yeah.
So I have a new formulation that actually I used to use these things separately. You know, it's interesting because when it comes to drugs, what they're starting to do that seems to be working better is instead of giving drugs that increase one or two neurotransmitters, now they're giving these multimodal medications, things like Trintellix. Mm-hmm. Which increases a number of neurotransmitters at the same time, which in my opinion is what the old tricyclic antidepressants used to do, which I think were a little more effective. Not that they didn't have terrible side effects. So what I used to use a couple of years ago, I would use a few separate supplements together. I would use things like SAMe, 5-HTP, an Ayurvedic herb called Makuna.
Yep, which raises dopamine.
Exactly. It actually has dopamine in it, so it's giving you a little dopamine. Mm-hmm. And then this Chinese herb called Apocynum venatum, which probably isn't too well known an herb. So I use those in combination and some tyrosine. And I use those in combination, and I have a formula called Neurotransmitter Balance, which I've been using now for probably about a year and a half, and I find very good results for people who kind of have that low mood, like they kind of gave up, that we talked about learned helplessness. And it gently kind of raises all – it gives the body what it needs to raise the neurotransmitters naturally. Now, again, you know, using these is still just addressing neurotransmitters. So while we're doing that, I always want to make sure we're working on sleep and foods and exercise and a person's stressors and, you know, and checking the underlying issues as well. But I find, well, while doing that naturopathically, it's really nice to use a formula like that just to support the brain, especially for people who have been on drugs for a long time and their brain is pretty depleted of these things. I find that formula is very, very helpful, and those individual elements are very good.
How do people get a hold of it?
Well, I mean, they can, if they search Neurotransmitter Balance, the company is called Douglas Labs, and they're the ones who actually manufacture it. So whether you can go to my website and get it, I have a website called 3UNEED, the letter U, need.com. It's on there too, but they, you know, they can really probably, these things are everywhere on the internet, certainly through my practice as well.
Indeed. One conspicuous absence from your list of recommended supplements is something that in the past has been quite popular. St. John's wort, do you favor it, or has it kind of gone out of style?
So St. John's wort is the most well-studied herb of all time. In fact, a very recent July 2016 meta-analysis, which is very stringent, looked at from 1966 to 2016, all the studies that have been done on St. John's wort, and they did a very stringent analysis, and they picked only 27 studies out of the hundreds of studies, and because these were the tightest, most strict studies they could find, and what they found was that St. John's wort was indeed at least as good as antidepressants in terms of alleviating depression, but had far less side effects. Mm-hmm. So there's no question in my mind that St. John's wort is excellent. In fact, there's only two supplements that the American Psychiatric Association has deemed good for depression. One is SAMe, mm-hmm. and the other one is St. John's Wort. So there's no question St. John's Wort works, and Hippocrates used to use it for both anxiety and depression, and used it as a digestive tonic, which tells you a lot, right, about where these things come from in part. So yeah, absolutely. I think St. John's Wort is wonderful. The reason I didn't put it in my formula is because there are a number of medications that it will interact unfavorably with.
Yeah, I was going to ask
and
you about that.
And so for that reason, I always use St. John's Wort separately. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of St. John's Wort. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like the medications themselves, they don't fix things 100% by themselves. But I think in line with the right sleep and diet and exercise and stress work and all those things, and I think it's very powerful. Absolutely.
Let's take a moment to talk about exercise and the efficacy of exercise. I first learned about the effectiveness of exercise for depression when I read an article, must have been 20 years ago or so, about some psychologists who charged their patients for taking them for a run around the reservoir in Central Park. And they got a workout, and they're clients poured out their troubles.
That.
Yeah, hey, you know, it worked for the psychologists, and they got paid for it.
I love that idea. I think I was like, exercise is, whether we're talking about ADHD or anxiety or depression, I mean, exercise is clearly as beneficial as medications. And there's one study I know that they did for depressed patients where they either gave them Lexapro or had them start exercising. And they did that for a number of weeks, and then they stopped both of them. And what they found was that the exercise took a little longer to kick in and start working, but the exercise, the benefits far lasted out the Lexapro benefits in terms of recurrence.
Mm-hmm.
And exercise does so many things for us. It lowers inflammation, it balances blood sugar, it raises good cholesterol, lowers bad cholesterol, increases heart efficiency, it lowers anxiety. It's one of the few things proven to increase life expectancy. Mm-hmm. So there's no drug that does all those amazing things.
Can you think of any commonly used drugs that are sort of nutrition robbers that might increase one's likelihood of suffering from anxiety? You know, there's so many medications that people use. Are there certain medications that deplete you that maybe you ought to look out for?
Yeah, well, generally almost all medications deplete something. Statin medications, which are so popular, are very depleting of coenzyme Q10. We need CoQ10 to run our mitochondrial systems, which is what makes energy. So I think many patients get very depleted, and if they're prone to anxiety and depression and their mitochondria aren't producing the energy as needed, they're going to be much more likely to move in that direction. So that's certainly one. A lot of patients who are diabetic are on metformin, and that really reduces B vitamins, especially B12. So we'll see more increased rate of depression as well, mm-hmm. with that and anxiety. Medications in general are very depleting. The psychiatric medications themselves deplete the precursors we need to make the neurotransmitters. So a lot of these SSRIs will deplete, things like tryptophan from our brain. We have to watch most of them.
Mm-hmm. And these days there's a lot of excitement, even among conventional psychiatrists, about using B vitamins, methylating agents as hamburger mm-hmm. helper for antidepressants. They don't believe necessarily in using them in lieu of antidepressants, but they, at the psychiatric conventions, they have a little table where they say, hey, if your patient's on an SSRI or an SNRI, give them this because it'll act like hamburger mm-hmm. helper for your prescription.
Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. As the studies come out, what we're starting to see, when I lecture to physicians, I have a couple of slides discussing all the nutrients that have been shown to be very helpful. And now the list is getting longer and longer. First on the list is fish oil, mm-hmm. has been shown to augment, patients who have what's called treatment-resistant depression, meaning that they're not really responding well to the drugs, and then you give them the nutrient, and they start doing much better. So fish oil is one of them. Folic acid, as you said, the methylator is helpful too. Giving people B12 is another one. Zinc has been shown to be very useful with medications. And then things that support the hormones, especially thyroid, has also been shown to be useful.
That's an important area. Yeah.
One that a lot of people don't think about is also there's something called creatine, which is known in the workout world for something to help build muscle a little bit faster. Mm-hmm. But creatine has also been shown to be one of those hamburger helper ones that really can help antidepressants work a lot better.
Hmm. I didn't know that. That's so it's if you take it, you're not just you're not just a muscle head. You're actually feeding your head.
Yeah, well, what's been shown is that it feeds the mitochondria. It helps them make more ATP, more energy, and that seems to help both anxiety and depression as well.
That's good stuff. All right, so this information and lots more is encapsulated in your books. Let's review them. Put Anxiety Behind You, the latest book, How Come They're Happy and I'm Not, and Holistic Solutions for Anxiety and Depression, and give us some information about your practice. You see patients from all over the country. Do you consult long distance?
Yes, I do. I do Skype and phone consultants, so I do have patients from around the country and around the world now. We have a practice here in New York City, as you know, and also one in Long Island and Huntington. And people can find the practice through www.innersourcehealth.com.
Okay, that's www.innersourcehealth.com.
Mm-hmm. And my personal website is drpeterbongiorno.com. And if you're Italian, you might know how to spell that. If you're not, the last name is B-O-N-G-I-O-R-N-O.
Okay. And it's drpeterbongiorno.com.
Yes.
And they'll, through all those different handles, they'll find you eventually. And you see, you have a general practice, though, of integrative medicine. So you see other than anxious patients.
I do. Yeah, well, you know, what I've learned is when you're working with anxiety, when you're working with depression, you really do have to kind of know about all different aspects of the body and physiology. And that relates not only to anxiety and depression, but it relates to autoimmune disease. It relates to blood sugar and diabetes and cardiovascular disease and cancer care. And so it's really, in a sense, you know, it's funny because I write these books on mental health, but the general idea of how to work with them really can be applied towards any condition, because mm-hmm. It's really not about the condition. It's about coming up with steps to get the body healthier by getting a person sleeping, by getting them pooping, by getting them eating properly and exercising and reducing stress and getting the right nutrients in. And really, that's applicable to pretty much every condition.
As the saying goes, in mens sana, corpora sana, in a sound mind in a healthy body. In other words, a healthy body is a prerequisite to a sound mind. So working on the body makes a hell of a lot of sense. Thank you very much, Dr. Peter Bongiorno, for joining us. And keep up the great work. Keep communicating this vital information to our anxious populace. And
this was a pleasure. Thank you so much for the work you do. It was a pleasure to be here.
It's my pleasure. And keep ministering to the to New Yorkers in the aftermath of what has been a little bit of a traumatic year for many. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you'll be with us for the next 4 years and beyond. I'm Dr. Ronald, and we may need it. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.